Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tojayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshwabhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Let's chant this first. First, please. Text 44. Everybody is prepared. Page 180 in this volume. It differs. 115.44. Udichim. The northern side. Pravivesha Asam. Those who wanted to enter there. Gata Purvam. The path accepted by his forefathers. Maha Atmabhi. By the broad-minded. Hridi. Within the heart. Brahmam. The supreme. Param. Godhead. Dhyanam. Constantly thinking of. Na avarete, avarita. Sorry, na avar, na avarteta. Past his days, yataha, wherever, gataha, went. Udichim parivesham. Gata Purva Mahatmabhi. Riddhi Brahma Param Dhyayan. Navarteta Yato Gataha. Udichim Parivesham. Gata Purva Mahatmabhi. Riddhi Brahma Param Jayan. Navarteta Yatogataha. Please chant. Udichim Pravivesham. Yata. Riddhi Brahma Param Jayan. Navarteta Yatogataha. Udichim Pravivesham. Sapurvan Mahatmabhi. Avarteta yatogataha. Udichim parivesham. Gata purva mahatmabhi. Vriti Brahma Param Vyayan. Navartita Yato Gata. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. He then started towards the north. Who is he? Maharaj Yudhisthira, yes. Then started towards the north, treading the path accepted by his forefathers and great men, to devote himself completely to the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he lived in that way wherever he went. Report. Do we have a live mic somewhere? We'd like to read.
It is understood from this verse that Maharaj Yudhisthira followed in the footsteps of his forefathers and the great devotees of the Lord. We have discussed many times before that the system of Varnashram Dharma, as it was strictly followed by the inhabitants of the world, specifically by those who inhabited the Aryavarta province of the world, emphasizes the importance of leaving all household connections at a certain stage of life. The training and education was so imparted, and thus a respectable person like Maharaj Yudhisthira had to leave all family connections for self-realization and going back to Godhead. No king or respectable gentleman would continue family life till the end, because that was considered suicidal and against the interest of the perfection of human life. In order to be free from all family encumbrances and devote oneself 100% in the devotional service of Lord Krishna, this system is always recommended for everyone because it is the path of authority. The Lord instructs in the Bhagavad Gita 18:62 that one must become a devotee of the Lord at least at the last stage of one's life. A sincere soul of the Lord, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, must abide by this instruction of the Lord for his own interest. The specific words Brahma Param indicate Lord Sri Krishna. This is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:13 by Arjuna with reference to great authorities like Asita, Devala, Narada, and Vyas. Thus Maharaj Yudhisthira, while leaving home for the north, constantly remembered Lord Sri Krishna within himself, following in the footsteps of his forefathers, as well as the great devotees of all times.
Good. Okay. Let's go on and read text 45, translation of purport, please.
The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira observed that the age of Kali had already arrived throughout the world, and that the citizens of the kingdom were already affected by irreligious practice. Therefore, they decided to follow in the footsteps of their elder brother. Should I read the purport to you?
You could pass it on. We'll pass it on. Correct.
The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira were already obedient followers of the great emperor. They had sufficiently been trained to know the ultimate goal of life. They therefore decidedly followed their eldest brother in rendering devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna. According to the principles of Sanatana Dharma, one must retire from family life after half the duration of life is finished and must engage himself in self-realization. But the question of engaging oneself is not always decided. Sometimes retired men are bewildered about how to engage themselves for the last days of life. Here is a decision by authorities like the Pandavas. All of them engage themselves in favorably culturing the devotional service of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Swami Sridhara, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are fruit of activities, philosophical speculations, and salvation, as conceived by several persons, are not the ultimate goal of life. They are more or less practiced by persons who have no information of the ultimate goal of life. The ultimate goal of life is already indicated by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita, and the Pandavas were intelligent enough to follow it without hesitation.
Next verse.
They all had performed all the principles of religion and as a result rightly decided that the lotus feet of the Lord Sri Krishna are the supreme goal of all. Therefore, they meditated upon his feet without interruption.
In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that only those who have done pious deeds in previous lives and have become freed from the results of all impious acts can concentrate upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The Pandavas, not only in this life but also in the previous lives, had performed the supreme pious work. And thus, they are ever free from all the reactions of impious work. It is quite reasonable, therefore, that they concentrated their minds upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. According to Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha principles are accepted by persons who are not free from the results of the impious action. Such persons affected with the contaminations of the above four principles cannot at once accept the lotus feet of the Lord in the spiritual sky. The Vaikuntha world is situated far beyond the material sky. The material sky is under the management of Durga Devi, or the material energy of the Lord. But the Vaikuntha world is managed by the personal energy of the Lord.
Text 47-48. Thus, by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is attained only by those who meditate upon the Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of Lord Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain the abode in their very same bodies.
According to Srila Jiva Goswami, a person freed from the three modes of material qualities, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, and situated in transcendence, can reach the highest perfection of life without change of body. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Hari Bhakti Vilas says that a person, whatever he may be, can attain the perfection of a twice-born Brahman by undergoing the spiritual disciplinary actions under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, exactly as a chemist can turn gunmetal into gold by chemical manipulation. It is therefore the actual guidance that matters in the process of becoming a Brahman, even without change of body, or in going back to Godhead without change of body. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks that the word he, used in this connection, positively affirms this truth, and there is no doubt about this factual position. The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, verse 26, also affirms the statement of Srila Jiva Goswami when the Lord says that anyone who executes devotional service systematically without deviation can attain the perfection of Brahman by surpassing the contamination of the three modes of material nature. And when the Brahman perfection is still more advanced by the selfsame execution of devotional service, there is no doubt at all that one can attain the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, without change of body, as we have already discussed in connection with the Lord's returning to his abode without a change of body.
Vidura, while on pilgrimage, left his body at Prabhasa. Because he was absorbed in thought of Lord Krishna, he was received by the denizens of Pitriloka planet, where he returned to his original post.
The difference between the Pandavas and Vidura is that the Pandavas are eternal associates of the Lord, the personality of Godhead, whereas Vidura is one of the administrative demigods in charge of the Pitriloka planet and is known as Yamaraj. Men are afraid of Yamaraj because it is he only who awards punishments to the miscreants of the material world. But those who are devotees of the Lord have nothing to fear from him. To the devotees he is a cordial friend, but to the non-devotees he is a fear personified. As we have already discussed, it is understood that Yamaraj was cursed by Manduka Muni to be degraded as a Shudra, and therefore Vidura was an incarnation of Yamaraj. As an eternal servitor of the Lord, he displayed his devotional activities very ardently and lived a life of a pious man, so much so that a materialistic man like Dhritarashtra also got salvation by his instructions.
By his pious activities in the devotional service of the Lord, he was able to always remember the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus he became washed of all contamination of a sudra-born life. At the end, he was again received by the denizens of Pitriloka and posted in his original position. The demigods are also associates of the Lord without personal touch, whereas the direct associates of the Lord are in constant personal touch with him. The Lord and his personal associates incarnate in many universes without cessation. The Lord remembers them all, whereas the associates forget due to their being very minute parts and parcels of the Lord. They are apt to forget such incidents due to being infinitesimal. This is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.5.
Before we go on, I'd just like to briefly mention about this pastime of Manduka Muni and Vidura. Last night, at the Sunday feast, after the Sunday feast, Chaitanya returned back with the van, and there was Ananda Seva and Bhakti Brandon, among others. And she said, "Where were you at the time to be picked up?" And Bhakti Brandon said, Ananda Seva told me not to tell you this, but we wanted to stay later," or something like that. So that reminded me of this pastime. Because this Manduka Muni was meditating in the forest, and some thieves came, and they were being chased by the police. So the thieves said to him, "Don't tell them where we went." And so then they ran off, and then the police came, and they said, "Which way did they go?" And Manduka Muni said, "They went that way." And actually, they had gone that way. So it's because he had promised them. So the police ended up catching the thieves, and they also arrested Manduka Muni. And as punishment for aiding these thieves, he was pierced with lances. So then he went to the abode of Yamaraj and said, "What's going on here? I am a pious Muni, and I was just telling the truth, or I was just honoring my word to these thieves." See, and Yamaraj said, "Well, when you were a child, you pierced insects with pins, and therefore you got this reaction of being pierced by the lances of the king." So Manduka Muni felt this is terribly unfair and inappropriate. After all, a small child may do something like that, but he does it out of innocent ignorance. And he cursed Yamaraj, so you take birth as a Sudra. So this is why Yamaraj became Vidura. But Bhakti Brandon will avoid that fate. Okay. Next.
Draupadi also saw that her husbands, without caring for her, were leaving home. She knew well about Lord Vasudev, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Both she and Supadra became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and attained the same results as their husbands.
When flying an airplane, one cannot take care of other planes. Own plane. And no other plane can help another. Similarly, at the end of life, when one has to go back home, back to Godhead, everyone has to take care of himself without help rendered by another. This, the help is, however, offered on the ground before flying in space. Similarly, the spiritual master, the father, the mother, the relatives, the husband, and others can all render help during one's lifetime. But while crossing the sea, one has to take care of himself and utilize the instructions formally received. Draupadi had five husbands, and no one asked Draupadi to come. Draupadi had to take care of herself without waiting for her great husbands.
And because she was already trained, she at once took to concentration upon the lotus feet of the Lord Vasudeva Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The wives also got the same result as their husbands in the same manner. But that is to say, without changing their bodies, they reached the destination of Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that both Rupati and Subhadra, although her name is not mentioned herein, got the same result. None of them had to quit the body.
The subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life.
Report. Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord like the Pandavas. The narration of the personality of Godhead and his devotees is absolute in itself, and thus to hear it with a devotional attitude is to associate with the Lord and constant companions of the Lord. By the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can attain the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead, without failure. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports, the first canto, 15th chapter.
The Pandavas retire timely. Did anyone see a movie called City of Joy? I don't know. But I do remember that it had a scene in which a City of Joy is what? Calcutta. Who has been to Calcutta? Did you find it a city of joy? It is, yes, one of the most impoverished metropolitan areas in the world. And this, in this film, the hero and his family move from a remote rural village to Calcutta in hopes of a better life, which is a real common phenomenon. And so upon arriving in the city, he met some nice man who said, "You need a place to stay. Okay, I've got an apartment. I can rent this to you." And he brought them there. It was simple but adequate place, and they were happy. So the husband, wife, and the children were setting up, and they paid the man the first month's rent in advance, and a deposit, which was more or less all of their money. And they're happily making some prasadam for the evening, and the owners of the apartment come in and say, "What are you doing here?" And they threw them out. So they had been swindled immediately upon arriving in the City of Joy. So this is analogous to our position in the material world. We think we've got our situation secured, and then all of a sudden we get kicked out. So it happens to everybody, regardless of their religious persuasion. In fact, this is one principle of spirituality or religion that practically any religious person would agree with, that this world is not our home. There are many Christian songs that come to mind. One hymn, "And I don't want to stay in this world anymore." So many. So it's called the Vale of Tears. The Vale meaning a little valley. This world, the Vale of Tears, a place where you go and suffer. So this concept is universally accepted by religious people, but the notion of giving it up is not universally accepted. Rather, the tendency is to what? Yeah, make it a comfortable place where I can stay, just like the squatters in City of Joy. See? They're an immediate instinct. Let me make it nice and we'll be happy. But then they can't stay there. So in the same way, the Pandavas understood that they could not remain in their position. Now consider for a moment what the Pandavas have been through. They are sons of gods to start with. Yudhisthira is the son of Yamaraj. And Bhima is the son of Vayu, the wind god. And Arjuna is the son of Indra. And Nakula and Sahadev, the Ashwini Kumars. All of them are sons of gods raised by the great king Pandu and heirs to this ancestral throne of Bharat. So all of them are so qualified. And how did they spend their life? They were orphaned at a young age. They were victims of conspiracies at a young age. They attained some opulence and then they lost it all in a moment. They lived under the thumb of their enemies for years. And then they fought a terrible war in which most of their friends were killed and many of their relatives. And then at the end they have this brief period of ruling the kingdom. And during that time, at least part of that time, the leader, Yudhisthira Maharaj, was racked with guilt over having killed so many men to attain this kingdom. So this is their life. And these are pure devotees. So they had no notion of making some permanent settlement in this world, in spite of being in a position to do virtually anything in this world they wanted to do. Instead, they, as we're reading, renounce their whole situation in a moment. So this is the denouement, the conclusion of the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata records the whole story of the war and events leading up to this point. Now, here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we read how it all comes out in the end. So, the Mahabharata is called by Madhvacharya, I believe, he referred to it in very strong terms, a wholesale corrupt scripture, in that there are so many versions of it. So we do not have a definitive version of Mahabharata. Therefore, you'll find many contradictory stories and accounts of various parts of the episodes. So please don't get hung up on that. The Srimad Bhagavatam is authoritative. There's only one version of it. It is the definitive text. So the descriptions given in this section summarize, or they give an overview of what happened to the Pandavas. There is a more detailed description in the Mahabharata, which I, at least one version with which I'm familiar. I'm going to share that with you. So at this point, of course, Yudhisthira has been ruling the kingdom. It has been going very well. But Parikshit Maharaj is now of age, barely, and Yudhisthira has heard this news about Lord Krishna's departure, and he does not want to live in this world anymore without Krishna's presence. He just sees no appeal whatsoever. So as we read on in the last class before the break, he just stopped combing his hair. He stopped dressing himself properly and just wandered off to the north, and he didn't talk to anybody about it. So, okay, well, let's sit down and plan our retirement. You know, he did not consult with his financial advisors. He did not even consult with his brothers. He just walked out of the palace, heading north to the Himalayas. And he appeared to be like somebody who was dumb. He could not speak. So there was no persuading him. There was no dialogue about it. And everybody knew, as the first verse we read said, this was the path accepted by his forefathers and all great persons. At some point, you just have to give it up, because it isn't our home. So, when Yudhisthira resolved to leave home, his brothers, as we read, also resolved to leave with him. So they all began ascending Mount Meru, the highest mountain in the Himalayas. And Draupadi followed along. Now, they were not taking responsibility for her care, but being unable to separate herself from her husband, she also went with them. Then they were also joined by one dog. And the dog trailed along, some stray dog. Dogs in India, as those of you who've been there know, are a different social category than dogs in America. Dogs in India are feral. They're wild, running here and there, and nobody really cares for them. Their bodies are covered with open sores. Their hair is matted. They're scrawny and filthy, and they all look exactly the same. You know, there's no curly-haired poodles and... Okay, I am corrected. There is a poodle in Vrindavan. So, anyway, this dog was not a well cared for poodle. It was just simply a scrawny mutt. There they ascended the mountains, and all of a sudden Draupadi fell. She could no longer go any higher. And Bhima, who was right behind Yudhisthira, asked him, "Why has our sinless wife Draupadi fallen?" And Yudhisthira, his eyes straight ahead, said, "Although she was married to all five of us, she was a little partial to Arjuna. That was her fault. And therefore she could not go any further." So then they went on, and Sahadev fell. Again, Bhima asked Yudhisthira, "Why has our sinless brother fallen?" And he said, "He always thought himself more intelligent than everybody. So that was his fault." And then a bit further on, Nakula fell. What was his fault? He always thought himself more beautiful than everyone else. Yes. Then a little further on, Arjuna fell. Again, Bhima asked, why? And Yudhisthira says, anyone remember what Yudhisthira said? That one escapes me. He had some fault. Arjuna had some fault. And had committed a minor transgression, as I recall. And therefore he could no longer go further. And then Bhima fell. And before he walked away, he said, Yudhisthira, what was my fault? And he said, whenever prasadam was served, you always ate as much as everyone else put together. So then Yudhisthira alone went on, followed by the dog. And he ascended the mountain, and there was a airplane ready to take him to the spiritual world. And the attendant said, please come on. And then the dog followed him, and he encouraged the dog. And the attendant said, what are you doing? You can't bring a dog along on this. On this flower airplane. They have to be checked in at baggage. No, just kidding. No, he's not qualified. And Yudhisthira said, anyone who has taken... he said, then I'm not going. I won't go. Because if someone has taken shelter of me, I cannot abandon them. So then, as the dog revealed himself to be, I believe it was Yamaraj, his father, and saying how he had passed this test, and now he could proceed directly in his self-same body to the spiritual world. But when he got there, he found a very disconcerting sight. He saw Duryodhana sitting on a throne, along with Sukuni and Karna and others on Duryodhana's side. They were all sitting on these resplendent thrones in the heavenly planets. And Yudhisthira said, where are my brothers? And he was told, they are not here. He said, well, then I don't want to stay here. Take me to where my brothers are. So then he descended a long staircase and entered the regions of hell, where the obnoxious smells and horrible sights of people suffering was going on. And he heard his brothers' voices. So, in short, this again was a test. And also a bit of karma for Yudhisthira. When he found his brothers, then they all ascended to the spiritual sky. Anyone know why he had to visit hell? Yes, when Krishna, during the battle, Krishna had told him, announced that Ashwatthama is dead. Ashwatthama is the son of Drona. And Drona was just chewing up their troops, killing all of their soldiers. So Krishna, seeing how Drona was about to destroy their army, unfairly, by the way, using weapons that were beyond the scope of the battle, Krishna said, tell him that Ashwatthama is dead, then he won't want to live. So Yudhisthira said, I can't lie. And at that point, Bhima killed brought an elephant named Ashwatthama, killed it. And then Krishna said, all right, now say that Ashwatthama is dead. And Yudhisthira said, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. But when he said the elephant, Krishna sounded his conch shell just that moment, so the sound of the elephant was obscured. And Drona heard only Ashwatthama is dead. And having heard it from Yudhisthira, who never lied, he at once lost his will to fight. Set down his weapons, sat down in meditation. And when he dropped his weapons, Drishtadyumna, who had been born to kill Drona, came up from behind him and decapitated him. So this was the sin of Yudhisthira, that he did not immediately oblige Lord Krishna's request. So... thus, he had to glimpse hell. So this is a little more of the departure of the Pandavas from this world, full of incredible pastimes and different versions and different editions of Mahabharata. But the point is, they had to give up their family, and they did. They gave up comforts that we can hardly imagine. So Prabhupada writes very strongly in the purports that this is the duty of every civilized person to, at the end of life, devote exclusive attention to the personality of Godhead. Now, how does this apply in our modern situation, in our present situation? Most of you are very young people, so you don't really think about this very much. Or if you do, it's only in a superficial way. Yes, later I'll deal with it. And that's fine, because it's not something that should consume you. But the best example that we can study and all benefit from is Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada was married at a very young age, just about 20 or 21. His wife was several years younger, and he did not particularly like this woman. He wanted to marry a second wife who he liked better, but his father discouraged him, said, "No, don't extend your entanglement." That was, of course, socially acceptable at that time, and early 1900s in India. So Prabhupada was with his wife, Radharani, for about 35 years or so. And he worked very hard the whole time supporting the family. And he was a deep student of the Shastra. And gradually, under the influence of his spiritual master, became more and more interested in teaching Krishna consciousness in English. In any language, really, but he was particularly instructed to do it in English. So from his position as a businessman, he thought, "I will earn a lot of money, and then I will use that money to spread Krishna consciousness widely." But somehow all of his plans to earn money were undermined and defeated. He started off life in a very nice position. He was given a high-level job in a chemical company by a family friend. And the employees underneath him, who had been with the company for decades, complained, to the owner, "Why have you given this responsible post to this newcomer?" And he said, "He's like my son. I need someone in this post I can count on to sign checks and to be honest dealing with so much money." So Prabhupada had that beginning in his career, and in a very bold move, eventually went into his own business. See, he could have stayed very comfortably in that position and made a lot of money and but you cannot make money selling your time to other people. You can make a living, but you can't make a profit, unless you're very, very frugal. So Prabhupada had higher ambitions, unless he wanted to work for himself. See, as one entrepreneur put it, "I'd rather have 1% of 100 people's time than 100% of my own time." So this is the only way to make money. You have to make a little bit of money from a lot of people's efforts. So this was Prabhupada's ambition. So he started his own company, and it was going very strong for a while, but then he eventually lost everything due to various intrigues. So his aspiration to make a bunch of money and spread Krishna consciousness was shattered. He could barely get enough to publish his Back to Godhead magazine, which he would then distribute. And his family found all of this very irrelevant and very unrelated to their needs. So sometimes people, in a kind of juvenile way, will characterize Prabhupada's wife as this really materialistic person. And that's really not an accurate caricature. She was very devout, person, pious, very devoted to her family. But she did not share Prabhupada's enthusiasm for the missionary work. So her idea was to have some social function and entertain people. Prabhupada's idea was to have them come and study Bhagavad Gita and do kirtan. So when Prabhupada would invite people for those purposes, she would stay in the other room. Prabhupada told my godbrother Abhiram, according to Abhiram Prabhu directly, that he regretted not treating his wife better, and said that she was a very good wife. Likewise, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, just a side note, said that this was the one regret of his life, that he left his young devotee wife at a very early age and took sannyas. So these things should not be seen as easy decisions, you know, done without regret, done without deliberation, capricious, whimsical decisions. What is the result, according to Bhagavad Gita, of renunciation in the mode of passion?
Distress.
Yes, distress. How is it characterized? Why does one renounce in the mode of passion? Because it's troublesome. It's, yes, so my situation is troublesome, therefore I renounce. Okay. This is not the kind of renunciation we're talking about. Renunciation in the mode of goodness is done out of duty, but even more so out of a taste, actually transcendental renunciation. It's done the way Prabhupada did it. He went to Jhansi, this dusty small town, but he found some receptive people who wanted him to start a temple. And he attempted to start a temple there. And this was giving him life. His ideas of spreading Krishna consciousness were starting to fructify. And he envisioned this international league of devotees headquartered in Jhansi, which was an odd place for an international anything. But there again, he found a little encouragement. And that gave him the support or the enthusiasm to focus his time there and take away from his business with which he was barely supporting his family. By this time, Prabhupada was about in his mid-50s, and his children were grown, and his wife none of them saw any value in this, what he was doing in Jhansi, but it was driving him, inspiring him very deeply. See? So this is the dichotomy that it is natural that a family will always look at the breadwinner and say, just win bread. You know, you bring the chapatis. And the family man wears the yoke spiritual of family life for many decades and plows the field and brings in the money and takes care of the responsibilities. So Prabhupada writes in elsewhere in the Bhagavatam how even after so many years in the harness, the family will not appreciate the efforts of the husband and father, and they will just expect that to continue. So the American ideal is to have to make so much money that you can afford to then retire and play golf in the villages and. You know, just string on your material body as long as you possibly can. So, this is obviously a very self-defeating plan. If that is all there is, you know, if sense gratification is all there is in life, then it is a very tragic ending. Better that we simply euthanize the elderly. You know, instead of letting them suck up all the resources. Okay. Okay. This is the direction things will go. You'll see over the course of your lifetime. Because people are aging. There are more old people in America than ever before. There were some few hundreds of people who lived to be past 100 in America you know, just a few decades back, now there are hundreds of thousands of people who, over 100, because the medical care is improving, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, the point is, because people do not know, nate vidu svartagatim hi vishnu, they don't know the purpose of life is Krishna consciousness, so they just try to string on sense gratification as long as possible. And that's a sad thing. So in our own lives, we really can't affect what everyone else is doing in the world, but in our own life, can we be prepared for this kind of renunciation at the appropriate time? If our purpose is to serve Krishna, then Krishna will help us. And Krishna will make things clear and easy to pursue. Not on the basis of I need to renounce, but on the basis of I need to serve Krishna. And for my service to Krishna, I have to give up these things. That's the transcendental platform of renunciation. So it should never be done as a matter of social formality. Oh, I am such and such age, therefore I leave my family. You know, but like Yudhisthira Maharaj, he is leaving the situation for a higher purpose. And it has become clear to him by all circumstances he is no longer needed. But even more so, because everyone is driven by what they really want to do, he just does not want to be in the world anymore if Lord Krishna is not there. So thus renunciation for him is very natural and thorough and possible. So any comments or questions on these points? Chintami?
What can we learn from that story that you were telling us about the Pandavas leaving their bodies, you know, like falling off? It seems so heavy and so cold and so like they just did this tiny thing and they're like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can learn that even for such great souls, this world is no shelter. And they had come in the world. You remember at the beginning of the Krishna book how the earth is in distress and goes to the abode of Lord Vishnu and says, please help me. And Lord Vishnu says to all the gods assembled there that, don't worry, Krishna is coming. So all of you gods, you begin taking birth in among Krishna's associates. So the Pandavas were like that. They had just come to help Lord Krishna in his purpose of relieving the earth of the burden of these unnecessary armies. And so having accomplished that, they had no business there. So again, we should not look at death. It's difficult. But we should really not look at somebody dying, leaving this world as a tragedy. It is, if they leave in Krishna consciousness, it's a great victory. Let's see. And
I guess I was thinking more about the fact that they did such a minor thing and they got, and it just seems like because they're devotees of Krishna that wouldn't be a big deal.
Yes. The Mahabharata is on a lower platform than Srimad Bhagavatam. So we don't read about that in the Bhagavatam. I just wanted to share that interesting background. And this is an example, case in point. What the Bhagavatam says is just that they all went back to Godhead in their self-same bodies, a rarely given boon. we can't really vouch for the accuracy of these other things. And yet that story is commonly included in the Mahabharata. But the Bhagavatam gives the essence, which is that they did not have to suffer unduly. Okay. Krishna does make it easier for the devotee. That's what we can take from that. Diwakar Prabhu. Can you just pass the mic up there? Thank you. Mm-hmm.
In Prabhupada 45, it says that dharma, artha, kama, moksha are not the ultimate goal of life. And
Is dharma, artha, kama, moksha are not the actual goal of life. So these are the ordinary pursuits of human beings. Sridhar Swami is quoted. And again, just to help understand them in simple terms. Dharma means going to work Monday through Friday. Artha means getting your paycheck on Friday. Kama means spending it on Saturday for sense gratification. And moksha means going to church Sunday morning I'll never do it again. Right. So these are the cyclical pursuits of human society. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught prema pumarto mahan, that love of God is the actual fifth and transcendental goal of life. So that our real dharma is sanatana dharma, and it is not these cyclical ordinary dharmas. That makes sense? Sanatana dharma means to act on our platform, our eternal platform, as eternal servants of Krishna. Okay. Other comments, questions? Shruti Sagar.
I have a question. Yesterday I was reading the Bhagavatam, first canto, and I don't remember the verse, but in the purport, Srila Prabhupada said, he said that Varnashram is difficult to follow because people cannot sever their ties from family and friends. And
yes.
That. But I thought Varnashram is like, it has, you know, there is Grihastha Ashram and like that. So I thought in relation to like living, so I didn't understand that statement.
Yeah, Varnashram is difficult to follow because people have a hard time severing their ties from family and friends. Yes, so that's the point is just to follow Varnashram without Krishna consciousness is not in and of itself the solution in Kali Yuga. Is to ritually go through the changes as prescribed.
Wasn't the final straw for Prabhupada when his wife sold his Srimad Bhagavatam set?
It was.
For
tea biscuits.
For tea biscuits.
Yeah, she bartered his Bhagavatams for tea biscuits. Yes, that was, at least in the Lilamrita, it is recorded as the final straw. So then he just left. And he did not come back. He went to Jhansi. His elder son went to see him there as if to say, are you sure you want to do this? What's going on? And Prabhupada invited him to stay and engage in some service, and he stayed a little while and then left. But Prabhupada, although a sannyasi and renunciate later on, made provisions to provide a pension for his widow. So it was not just... Like they say in ISKCON vernacular, drop the load and hit the road. Drop the load and hit the road. Okay. Clayton, did you have a question or comment? No, it's okay.
Can I have a question, please. A lot of times when devotees pass away, no matter how advanced or not advanced they are, everyone says they went back to Godhead. To me, that doesn't make me feel better, and it also makes me question whether someone should be saying that at all. And I'm just wondering what do you think about that?
When somebody passes away and we say, oh, they went back to Godhead,
yeah.
Are you saying like you're not sure they really did?
Yeah.
Because maybe they weren't that Krishna conscious, or maybe the system doesn't work, you know, we really can't be sure. What we can be sure of is if somebody lives their life as a devotee in the devotional service of the Lord, they're generally much happier, much better adjusted mentally and psychologically, and much more of a contributor in the world than the average person. Right? Contributor, you know, a positive force. You know, working for the benefit of others. They waste less time on frivolous things. They get up earlier in the morning. Well, the point is that life is better with Krishna consciousness, even if there is no spiritual world. This is called Pascal's wager. Pascal was a theological philosopher who said that if heaven you and I cannot tell, he said, if heaven exists with our senses. You say it does not exist, I say it does exist. If you are right, then we are equal, because I'm happy and you're happy. So if you're right and there is no heaven, then we're equals because we're both happy. But if I'm right and you're wrong, then I'm going to heaven and you're going to hell.